Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center and an internationally recognized expert on colorectal cancer. Dr. Miller is the Director of the Connecticut Challenge Survivorship Program and is also the author of Choices in Breast Cancer Treatment. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ed welcomes Christine Parker and Lisa McCooey. They're the co-directors of the Comprehensive Cancer Program at the Connecticut Department of Public Health.
Chris, why don't we start off by discussing what the mission of the Department of Public Health is?
Well, the mission of the department is to enhance and to really look after the health and well-being of all state residents. But the mission of the Comprehensive Cancer Program is very specific, of course, to cancer. And that's to really reduce the burden of cancer, to reduce all of the illnesses associated with cancer, as well as morbidity and mortality associated with cancer. So we have a very broad goal and a lot of work.
When was the Comprehensive Cancer Program first established within the department?
The Comprehensive Cancer Program was established in 2002. Prior to that, the department had done much work in very specific areas, particularly breast and cervical cancer program, mm-hmm. given that that was the focus that CDC had at that point in time.
Right. And as I understand it, Lisa, this really kind of was established in coordination with the Centers for Disease Control.
That is correct. Our first funding in 2002 was a planning grant, and then approximately 3 years later, we were able to secure implementation funding, which essentially just about doubled the amount of funding that we received from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
And what I have found to be really, I think, very, very interesting about the whole program is that it really is a broad coalition that initially, I guess, started with five founding members. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the whole premise for comprehensive cancer in this case is a public health approach, mm-hmm. which is to provide coordination along the continuum of cancer care to reduce duplication and just to have a more coordinated effort.
Now, I'm just curious, do each of the states in the United States have such a comprehensive cancer program kind of built within the Department of Health?
That is correct. It is now a national program. All 50 states have at least planning monies. Most have implementation monies.
Uh-huh. And funding comes from the CDC, the government, the state government, a little bit of everything, or
it varies from state to state. Funding in many cases, all states have federal funding, and in some cases, states are fortunate enough to have secured state funding as well to complement the federal funding. And Connecticut is such a state where we have both federal and state funding.
Now, I know some states also get funding through the tobacco settlement. Are we able to take advantage of the tobacco settlement, which, as I understand it, I mean, there's just huge amounts of monies that were made available?
Historically, in the past, Connecticut has not been a state who has been dedicating their tobacco settlement dollars to public health and tobacco cessation activities. However, the $5.5 million, which the state legislature allocated to implement the state cancer plan in 2006, indeed, is from the tobacco settlement monies.
Oh, good. Terrific. And maybe we can review for our listeners, what are some of the main priorities of the Comprehensive Cancer Program?
The priorities, again, as Lisa commented, deal with all aspects of cancer and cancer care. So we're looking at funding different entities that deal with preventing cancer, detecting cancer early on, providing quality treatment, empowering and providing the resources for survivors, looking at what issues need to be addressed for end-of-life care and a lot of cross-cutting issues, probably the most important being reducing health disparities. Mm-hmm. Specific projects, I would say the two that are at this point in time priority projects for the state are developing a clinical trials network as well as conducting a pilot colorectal cancer screening program that will mirror how the breast and cervical cancer screening program has been implemented in Connecticut.
So it's interesting, Chris, that you mentioned developing the clinical trials network because, in fact, we here at the Yale Cancer Center were very fortunate to have been awarded, in fact, a grant from your program to help develop such a clinical trials infrastructure, kind of really help to reach out, I think, to the community or community partners, you know, begin to work with them, kind of educate them about the real importance of clinical trials, clinical research, and I guess the real essence of this program is, you know, how do we make available to all citizens in the state of Connecticut, you know, the access to really kind of state-of-the-art, cutting-edge clinical trials.
We know that there is a dire need there, not only on behalf of Connecticut residents, but on behalf of Connecticut's professionals, clinical individuals who really need to know that they can access these clinical trials for their patients. So we have a learning curve on both the clinicians as well as the Connecticut residents in the state.
Yeah, it's interesting. What we found was that there really is, you know, tremendous interest on the part of the healthcare providers throughout the state, you know, for getting involved, for having access. One is they just have very limited time because obviously they're very, very busy taking care of patients. And so one of the things we're thinking about is, you know, how can we kind of relieve that burden mm-hmm. by setting up, you know, kind of a centralized infrastructure. It's a challenge, but I think it's a challenge clearly that's well worth the effort because, you know, even here in the United States, which, you know, clearly has the best healthcare system in the world, you know, there are varying figures, but somewhere between 20 and 40% of all individuals have access to any type of colon cancer screening, let alone kind of the optimal gold standard for screening.
Yeah,
so again, you know, you folks should really be applauded for kind of helping to develop such a program.
Thank you. And we've done some research looking at individuals with healthcare coverage and their access to colorectal cancer screening. And it is one particular cancer screening modality that is significantly underutilized. And we know there are several reasons for that. So education, outreach, certainly go along with developing a colorectal cancer screening project, and we are making sure that all those components are included.
Right.
You just don't make available colorectal cancer screening and expect that individuals will come. So we really need some very intense in-reach, outreach, and education, and those are all components of the program.
And Lisa, you had mentioned about trying to also focus on the minority and underserved population. Is there also a focus on trying to, you know, further develop colon cancer screening in that underserved population as well? Because I know we're finding that to be an issue, certainly right here in the local New Haven area.
That's correct. We have contracted with the Community Health Center Association of Connecticut, who oversees almost all, but not quite all, the community health centers in Connecticut. And they have recruited 8 of their community health centers to participate in this project. And typically, lower-income folks access services at community health centers, and we all know that, unfortunately, minorities are disproportionately included in the lower-income socioeconomic group. So by going through local community health centers, we hope to be really reaching the population in need.
Hmm. Great. Okay. Now, one of the things we like to do on the show every once in a while is to kind of, you know, find out a little bit more about the, you know, our guests and how they got involved in cancer, if you will. And so I'm just curious, you know, Chris, Lisa, you know, how, you know, what's a little bit about your background and how did you eventually become co-directors of this program?
Well, I'll start, Lisa. I started my professional career in hospital administration and worked with a radiologist who at that time was president of the American Cancer Society.
Oh, okay.
And I saw the work that he did, and it really was impressive because he really had such an impact on the state. And I became involved as a volunteer with the American Cancer Society and then became one of their directors, and then heard the state was starting a cancer program and desperately wanted to be part of it. So did some informational interviews and eventually became part of a very new cancer program in Connecticut.
Great. Terrific. And Lisa?
Well, I have to confess that I'm a physician wannabe. When I was in high school, that's what my goal was, to become a physician, and I wanted to find a cure for cancer. As lofty as that sounds, that's what I really wanted to do, and somehow my path got a little detoured along the way, and I made my way to public health. So when a position became open in the Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program at the State Health Department, I applied, jumped at the chance, and was fortunate enough to be hired. And that was a number of years ago, and I've been working in cancer for the most part since 1993, I believe.
Well, certainly, you know, being part of this program really has a significant impact, right, on what happens to cancer care, you know, here in the state of Connecticut, but also, you know, throughout the country. So you're actually following, right, what you originally set out to do.
I'd like to think so.
So terrific. Well, you're listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and we're here in the studio discussing the role of the Connecticut Department of Public Health and the Comprehensive Cancer Program, and how this program can really help to improve overall cancer care here in the state of Connecticut.
The American Cancer Society estimates that in 2008, there'll be over 62,000 new cases of melanoma in this country, and about 2,400 patients are diagnosed annually here in Connecticut alone. While melanoma accounts for only about 4% of skin cancer cases, it causes the most skin cancer deaths. But when detected early, melanoma is easily treated and highly curable. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for melanoma. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here in the studio joined by our guests, Christine Parker and Lisa McCooey from the Connecticut Department of Public Health. Maybe to start off this segment of the show, we can review some of the high-priority programs that kind of are run out of your office.
Well, we have a number of them. We have the Connecticut Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program. We have the Wise Woman Program. And we have the cardiovascular, which is a cardiovascular disease risk reduction program. And we also have comprehensive cancer and colorectal cancer screening programs.
Great. Okay, well, why don't we start off with maybe reviewing a little bit about what the breast and ovarian, cervical cancer early detection program is all about.
We receive funding both federally and from the state to provide breast and cervical cancer screening, diagnostic services, and treatment referral to low-income, uninsured or underinsured women. And what we mean by underinsured is those women who insurances do not cover the screening services. And we have 17 contracted provider sites throughout the state and approximately 120 satellite sites, which are actually points of entry where women can come in. If they qualify for the program, they receive the screening services. And for most women, that's it. That's all they need. But in the event that they do have an abnormal mm-hmm. test result, diagnostic services are provided, and in the unlikely event that she is diagnosed with breast or cervical cancer, she's referred for treatment as well as referred to the Breast and Cervical Cancer Treatment Act, which means Medicaid will pay for her treatment for the duration of that she requires treatment.
And again, for the so if in fact, unfortunately, a mass is diagnosed, say, at the time of mammography, mm-hmm. the diagnostic procedure also would be covered?
That is correct.
So I know that's been a big issue that we faced here at the Yale Cancer Center, where, you know, we with with the generous support of the hospital, we have this what's called a memo van that goes out to some of the underserved areas. So the screening is done, but then unfortunately, those next steps, if in fact something suspicious is identified, there have been challenges in helping to underwrite, finance the diagnosis and then the treatment. So it sounds like this is really a very nice opportunity.
It is a very nice opportunity. CDC made it very clear that that's exactly what they didn't want to happen. So they made sure that as part of the program that diagnostic services could be covered under federal funding, and then treatment for referral was a mandate.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just curious, approximately how many women per year, you know, undergo, say, breast cancer screening?
We typically screen between 8,500 to 9,000 women per year.
Wow. So that's pretty significant.
It is significant. However, it's only approximately 12 to 15% of the women who are actually eligible for program services in Connecticut.
Now, at the time that these women undergo breast cancer screening, do they also undergo cervical cancer screening?
That is correct.
So again, you're hitting about 8 to 9,000 women in the state.
Correct.
But obviously, you'd like to, you know, what number would you like to hit if possible?
We have estimates that over about 50,000 women are eligible for the program. We'd love to do all the women who are eligible, but obviously funding can't allow us to do that.
And just curious, of those women that come for screening, you know, what percentage do you actually make a diagnosis of cancer?
Unfortunately, I don't have those numbers in front of me, but I would guess that that we probably diagnose maybe 50 breast cancers a year now, because part of the program philosophy, particularly with breast cancer screening, has been to have women come back according to the established guidelines for rescreening. Mm-hmm. So we've had many women who've participated in the program for quite a number of years. So now that through rescreening, if they are diagnosed with breast cancer, it's at much earlier stages.
Great. So. Now, Chris, how do you get the word out to the community and to you know the your target audience that services are available and that people should really take advantage of those services?
Well, the department currently contracts with the 17 major program providers. And again, those providers are the one that subcontract with 120 some odd satellite sites. At the 17 sites, part of our mandate to those sites is that with the funding that we allow them, that they hire an outreach educator. And we have a outreach educator, public education coordinator at the State Department of Public Health, who is responsible for training the 17 state outreach educators to ensure that they have the tools necessary to reach the population. So not only that, but we have done some wonderful media in the past that has been very successful, and we actually did a public service announcement where Meryl Streep did the voiceover years ago, and again, we allowed other states to use it. That was a very successful campaign, but we use every opportunity possible. There are so many programs where we, in collaboration with them, are working to make sure that several programs are announced if we have a captive audience or there is a forum that's available to us.
Now, have you thought about using, or maybe you are using, you know, these patient navigators? And I know also, you know, at the Cancer Center, we've also been trying to reach out to the churches and the ministers to kind of help us enlist, you know, these women at risk.
Yes, there are two projects that we are currently in the process of funding that do much of their work through the faith-based organizations. And so, again, we realize that we certainly need to be in those venues. But our outreach educators also do much with faith-based organizations. So we've not missed that opportunity, but I think the department now has decided to allocate some larger funding to ensure that we are really reaching as many women as we can through those venues.
And have you found that kind of over time there's kind of an increased acceptance of the importance or increased understanding of really the importance of these type of screening programs?
Absolutely, particularly when you see the utilization rates in Connecticut for both mammography and Pap testing. Mm-hmm. It's fairly high according to the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. And I think at this point in time, colorectal cancer kind of lags behind. And I think because it's a more complicated there's several screening modalities that can be used. I think test preparation, if you're having a colonoscopy, can be overwhelming. So I think that's where we're really trying to explore the use of patient navigators within our community health centers or somehow connect them so that we are using that model to assist folks through what can be somewhat of a daunting procedure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing to just consider, because I know that you know, with respect to colon cancer screening, women kind of are much less enthusiastic about going. It's about maybe half what males tend to do in terms of going for colonoscopy screening. In part, I think, you know, women tend to be maybe a little bit more squeamish about the prep, but also I think there's kind of this general feeling that, you know, breast cancer, cervical cancer, maybe, you know, ovarian cancer are much more important, occur more commonly, mm-hmm. colon cancer not so much, but we do know based on the numbers, you know, colon cancer is kind of equal opportunity and the incidence is really the same between males and females. And I wonder if there's a way to kind of, you know, link your colon cancer screening with the breast and cervical cancer screening, kind of get them right at that time that they're coming in for breast and cervical screening.
That is our hope. Currently, right now, CDC has 5 demonstration projects for colorectal cancer screening programs. And we have done everything we can to make sure that we are modeled. Our program is modeled using all the same tools, collecting all the same data, so that if along the road CDC does come out with additional colorectal cancer screenings monies, we will be in a perfect position to have all the pieces in place to apply.
Great. And I guess obviously I know there's been a great deal of focus placed on the minority underserved population, but I think another population that I know at the Cancer Center we're also beginning to think more about is the elderly population, mm-hmm. who tend to also kind of get forgotten amongst mm-hmm. all of that. And I'm just curious, you know, any efforts to really try to, you know, get the elderly population more actively involved in some of these screening programs?
Not at this point, but what we do is realize that what our eligibility criteria for the programs are certainly where we're going to target our outreach efforts and education efforts. And of course, with colorectal cancer screening, we know that 75% of all colorectal cancers occur in individuals 50 years of age and older. So of course, that's where we target our efforts. Again, we have the position I had referred to at the department, the outreach public education coordinator is a new position. So we're excited to have this individual on board. And again, we'll begin to expand those efforts beyond breast and cervical and the Wise Woman program and really begin to focus more on the colorectal cancer screening program and targeting the elderly.
Great. And you mentioned the Woman Wise program. Maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what that program involves.
Well, Wise Woman is a complementary program at the federal level to the Breast and Cervical Cancer Early Detection Program. It actually stands for Well Integrated Screening and Evaluation for All Women Across the Nation. And it came out of CDC's Division of Physical Activity and Nutrition, I believe. And the idea was you have a woman who's coming in for breast and cervical cancer screening. You have a captive audience. We all know that the number one killer is really heart disease. Yep. So how can we capitalize on the fact that we have these low-income women coming in for the breast and cervical cancer screening services? How can we deliver cardiovascular health screening services to them, but more importantly, to those women who are at risk, not those who are requiring medication for either high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or high glucose levels, but those women who are sort of those high normals who, through perhaps diet and change in their diet and a change in their exercise habits, if we can get them to improve their lifestyles, might their risk decrease for developing cardiovascular health disease. So 9 of our 18 Breast and cervical cancer screening sites are actually delivering Wise Woman services as well. And they do it through group interventions, through individual counseling, to try to help the women map out a way to improve her lifestyle.
I'm just curious, do you have nutritionists involved in
some,
this program?
Some of our provider sites, yes. Nutritionists are delivering the nutrition component of the program.
Yeah, it's really fascinating to me that when you look at kind of, I guess, the general principles behind general good health, general wellness, they really kind of are hand in hand with the general principles for kind of good cancer care, cancer prevention.
Correct.
Right? So exercise, physical activity, you know.
And tobacco cessation, too.
Tobacco cessation, you know, not to drink alcohol, or certainly in moderation, you know, fruits and veggies, green leafy vegetables, you know. You do all of those, you know, you'll have much better health in general, and you'll prevent the risk of developing cancer.
That's correct.
That is correct. We know that 35% of all cancers are directly related to diet. So, again, what we are practicing in the cardiovascular disease program, we know will impact their cancer risk as well.
Right. And I guess also it's important to emphasize that it's never too late to change.
That's
right, and
true.
Go from bad behaviors to good behaviors.
Very
That's true.
So great, terrific. You know, so thinking ahead, what are some of the new initiatives, new priorities that you folks are thinking about in your program?
Well, the Cancer Partnership is certainly well aware that our cancer plan is ending this year, 2008, and has been for the last year and a half been very active in coming up with another state cancer plan. And the cancer plan will begin 2009, the new cancer state cancer plan, and end in 2013. Again, it will have all of the areas that I had mentioned earlier. They will look at prevention, early detection, survivorship, end-of-life care. They will look at health disparities. But we have prioritized all of the objectives in the plan, and the plan will be ready to be implemented. So not only is the plan an important infrastructure piece for the entire state, because once the plan is in place, all partners of the cancer plan and the entities and our outside partners, we work to really implement the plan, because the plan is research and data driven. Mm-hmm. So we know that it is pretty much what we will encourage all of our providers to follow. So I think that has been one of the major initiatives, and now accessing funding to implement the plan will be certainly a second priority for the
partnership. Yeah, and I mean, obviously funding is always key, and where do you see the funding opportunity, especially given all of the financial difficulties that we hear on the news and radio every day?
It's certainly going to be a challenge. I think we have a project director, if you will, for the Connecticut Cancer Partnership, Lucinda Hogarty, who has been very actively mapping out what her strategy is going to be to move the partnership forward. And I'm sure one of her priorities is to explore alternative funding, be it foundations or other sources, because we all know that state and federal government, the dire straits they're in, I think we're going to have to look elsewhere.
Okay. Well, great. Obviously, what you two have been doing and what the program's doing is absolutely critical for, you know, the citizens here in the state of Connecticut. And so, you know, we look forward to having you back and hearing the progress, and hopefully maybe we can talk about some of the progress that we're doing with you folks on developing this clinical trials network. You've been listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'd like to thank my guests, Christine Parker and Lisa McCooey, for joining me. Until next time, I'm Dr. Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have any questions for the doctors or would like to share your comments, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.